Moving on now to a short discourse on Dzogchen. Dzogchen, correct pronunciation, preferable to Dzogchen. Dzogchen, composition of two Tibetan words, Dzog, which means perfection, that is the generally accepted translation, and Chen, which means great. And someone, I believe it might be the 14th Dalai Lama himself, has stated that the Sanskrit equivalent is Mahasandhi. So, what is the great perfection? Now, another scholar has proposed that the word Dzog, which rhymes with sog and dog, in fact, it doesn't rhyme with dog, it is pronounced dog, Dzogchen. In any case, I'll get back to that point in a moment. Another scholar, whom I prefer, proposes that Dzog means complete. Now, the word complete suggests the Greek term telios from the root telos, and that is the root of the word telestes, singular, and teleste, plural, hence the names given to themselves by the founders and teachers of the Western mystery schools. As I've pointed out for many years now, telios, the adjectival form of telos, should not be translated as perfect. Rather, it means ultimate or complete. It means the most that one can achieve in any situation. Nothing is ever perfect. Perfection might be a corrupted and misleading term. So, Dzogchen can be translated as the great completion. But the completion of what? This is the question. Or one of the questions that comes to mind with the introduction of this topic. Now, what I want to do in this talk is describe the conversion of Dzogchen into Dog Zen. So I'm actually proposing something that I call Dog Zen to entirely replace the totality of the teachings attributed to Dzogchen. I am actually proposing that. Now, of course, upon hearing this term, this title, this name I'm giving now to a body of practices, Dog Zen, naturally one wonders if it has anything to do with dogs. You know, Dog Zen could be a dog training program. How about teaching Zen to dogs? Or do dogs already practice Zen? I would be rather inclined to think that's the case. But the mischievous little turn of events that now reveals itself uses the term dog, yeah, to refer to dogs, certainly, but also to refer to the primary quality of a dog, primary quality, or one of the primary attributes of the canine species, considered as companions to the anthropine species. And everyone, of course, knows what that is. It's devotion. So the dog in Dog Zen refers to the element of devotion. And Zen refers to the practices that uphold that devotion. Zen is the Japanese contraction of Chinese word Daishan, which generally means meditation. But the true character of Zen, as applies in this case, is not meditation, although there are sorts of meditations involved. The true character is concentration. So Dog Zen is a practice with an element of devotion and an element of concentration. Now I'm going to go directly to what these practices are. There's really no requirement to know anything about Dzogchen as it has been traditionally defined, or to know anything about the massive material of propositions and practices that are associated with it. Let it suffice to read one sentence. This sentence is the first sentence of the foreword to a book called Kindly Bent to Ease Us. And Kindly Bent to Ease Us has three parts, and it is a long treatise attributed to a Nyingma Tertön and accomplished master, Longchenpa, or Longchen Rabgyam Pa. Now, the preface to this book is written by Tartang Tulku Rinpoche, and it says, quote, "Until now, there has been no authentic translation describing the Dzogchen teachings of the Nyingma school, which are the most sophisticated and effective practices of Vajrayana Buddhism." End quote. So Dzogchen is the summit of Vajrayana Buddhism, that is to say, of the diamond vehicle. And so it is identical with what Trungpa calls Ati Yoga. It is the top of the top, and it is the top secret instruction and the top secret method concerning the attainment of the great perfection. That is to say, the attainment of total and perfect awareness in the awareness that is the ground of all that exists. That is to say, you would not simply be using the power, whatever power that may be, that enables you to be aware right now, to be aware of being alive, of having a mind, to be aware of anything. You would not merely be using that power of awareness, but you would be experiencing it from its source, at its source. And this, lo and behold, you might be surprised to learn, turns out to be an extremely simple event. Although there's enormous complication around the topic of Dzogchen, as there is in all of the yanas of Buddhism, Hinayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana, Tantrayana, and Yana, Yana, Yana. All the nine yards of the nine yanas generate an enormous amount of material, but the actual factual experience, which is the goal of Dzogchen, is ultimately simple and ultimately accessible in a spontaneous and natural manner. Now, it's likely that I would dedicate another unit to talk somewhat about Dzogchen in traditional terms in order to establish the background of Dog Zen. All I will say now is that if and when I do so, I will make a really big point of my humble view that Dzogchen is identical with the Chan teachings of non-attainment. It is nothing but the Tibetan version, the Tibetan model, you could say, of Chan teaching of non-attainment. So I'll leave that point for the moment so that I can go directly into the essence of Dog Zen. Now there's a logo for Dog Zen, which I spontaneously designed a few days ago, and it's my pleasure to include this logo in its rough draft along with this talk. Now, to introduce Dog Zen, or to kick the rusty and dented can of Dzogchen down the road, it might be helpful to use a little mantric recitation. Mantrayana is another vehicle in the massive body of teachings of Tibetan Buddhism. Mantrayana, the vehicle of the mantra. And mantras can be helpful as little gimmicks to cue your NLP and to remind you of where you want your Rigpa to go. So in taking Rigpa directly to Dog Zen, which is called the method of direct pointing or direct introduction to the mind, here is a little mantra that will always get you there. One banana, two banana, three banana, four. That's it. That is the initiatory mantra. So if you recall back in the days when transcendental meditation was quite a craze, as promoted by Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi, the devotees of that guru, that Mahatma from the East, would be given a mantra. So here is the mantra for introducing Dog Zen, and it's the same for everyone. One banana, two banana, three banana, four. Now, to put this little mantra into practice, I invite you to imagine that you and I are sitting together somewhere in a beautiful setting in nature, on a summer porch, as they're called in New England, maybe looking out at a small lake. Maybe there's a canoe or a kayak pulled up there to go for a spin on the lake. And we're sitting in the warmth of the summer porch, screened off, but maybe the door is open, so we look out at the lake, trees around the lake, feeling the warmth of the sun, sitting at a table, side by side, comfortable wicker chairs. And the table is a round table, not too large, situated between us, a little bit forward, and there on that table is a banana. One banana. What is one banana? Well, one banana is the real banana sitting on the table. In the real material world, presumed to be real material world, the realm of samsara, the realm of the tonal, in the jargon of Carlos Castaneda, the material mundane world, where the vast, vast numbers of human animals live without questioning its reality, presuming it to be real. And I assert that it is real. And the banana on the table is the real banana in the mundane material world. One banana. So let's just sit here for a moment, appreciate the setting, feel the warmth and comfort. Look at the banana on the table. You look at it, and I'll look at it at the same time. We'll just gaze at it for about 10 seconds so we both know what we're looking at. Next comes two banana. Now I ask you to imagine the exact same scene. You and I sitting on the summer porch. And the banana's on the table. The lake is in the distance. Sunlight glistening on the lake. Everything looks exactly the same as it did before. Except that we're in a dream. So you and I are in the same dream. The exact description of the dream fits the material world of one banana. But now when you and I together look at the banana on the table, that's two banana. How is two banana different? Well, it's the banana in the dream. It's the dream banana. So just sit for a moment and savor that little experiment in imagination, if you want to call it that. Imagine that. It's not a real life, mundane, material scene, but it's a duplication of it in a dream. An exact duplication, but it's in a dream. It's a dream, which is not the same as events in the material world. As you know, if you've dreamed, that's the case. You can't say, you can't argue, you can't claim that the landscape, the houses, the buildings, the cars, and the people that you meet in a dream, when you yourself are present in the dream, in your dream body, you can't claim that that is comparable to the mundane material world. Just savor that whole scenario for a moment. Just savor that second little event of you and I together. And then comes three banana. In three banana, setting is exactly the same as it was for one banana. And likewise for two. If you had some kind of supernatural power that enabled you to step back and look over here, say to your left, and see the actual material setting of you and I on the summer porch, looking at the banana, and then by some supernatural power, you could see the same setting, maybe in some kind of bubble lens, you could see you and I dreaming that we are sitting on the summer porch. Indeed, we're dreaming the summer porch and we're dreaming the lake. We're dreaming the entire scene, and you can see that in directly in front of your vision, two banana. And then you look off to your right and there's a third frame. There's a third portrait of this event. But just as the first portrait is identical to the second portrait in every detail, likewise, the third portrait of this event is identical. So if you were by the grace of some supernatural power of vision to scan your eyes over these three scenes, go ahead and imagine each of them in a sort of large bubble or in a lens. You're looking at a lens and the image is on the lens. Three identical images, but one banana is a real banana in the material world. Two banana is a dream banana. And three banana is a banana in a lucid dream. The banana in the lucid dream looks exactly like the banana in the non-lucid dream. The only difference is that you and I, sitting there side by side, may take our eyes away from looking at the banana and look at each other and nod. Yeah, we both know we're having a dream. This is a dream and we're in it. It's a lucid dream. In the second instance, two banana, we don't have that awareness. So the only difference between these three portraits of this moment when we're sitting on the porch together, the only difference is a knowledge you bring to that, to each one of those portraits. That one is happens in the material world and can be tested in terms of empirical reality and objectivity. The other one is in a subjective zone of dreaming. And the third one is also in a subjective zone of dreaming in which the dreamers know that they are dreaming. One banana, two banana, three banana. That is the totality. That is the perfect completion of the reality that you can encompass with human consciousness at the fullest level of awareness, grounded in the source of what allows you to be aware. Now, this totality I just described is nothing new. In fact, it's a sharp-worn trope from Buddhism that goes by the name of the Trikaya, K-A-Y-A. Now, you have the yanas in Buddhism, yana, yana, yana. And yana means a raft, but also a method, a way of getting somewhere, a way of getting something done. Kaya means something like a vehicle, something like an instrument that you use to accomplish a certain task. But it also means a body, something like a body, not a human body. There are many kinds of bodies. Think of the planetary body of the Earth, body of the sun. It represents some kind of embodiment, kaya. So trikaya means the triple embodiment. One banana, two banana, three banana. And all those bananas are identical. And they happen. They are there for your experience, happening in a unity. Now, just for the sake of making this conversion perfectly clear, let's consider the composition of the Trikaya. First, there is the Dharmakaya, as it's called. That's one banana. Solid material reality is the Dharmakaya, the totality of existence. You can go on and you can define it in dozens and dozens of ways, but it's simply verbiage. You can dispense with all that verbiage if you put yourself beside me on the summer porch and just look at one banana. The second component of the Trikaya is called the Sambhogakaya or Sambhogyakaya. And bhoga means pleasure in Sanskrit. So this is sometimes called the bliss body, whereas the Dharmakaya has many names, sometimes called the absolute body. The Sambhogyakaya is two banana. It's the banana that we behold when we are dreaming without knowing that we are in the dream, without being lucid. Third is the Nirmanakaya. The Nirmanakaya is three banana. So when you experience the Nirmanakaya, you find yourself in a state of lucidity, as it were, of someone in a lucid dream. However, with that analogy, or is it a metaphor or an analogy? With that analogy of a certain state of consciousness to lucid dreaming, you immediately stand at the threshold of this conversion. Now, this analogy to being in a dream or to the dreamlike character of the supposedly real world, the world of one banana, occurs continually through all the teachings of Buddhism. The mirror, the reference to the mirror. The way that the mirror can be described in Dog Zen is quite different from the way it has been routinely described in hundreds and hundreds of instances in Buddhist teachings. In the beginning of the knowledge of the difference, in the beginning of the appreciation of the difference, is in this proposition. Sitting together on the porch and looking at three banana, you and I know that we are having a dream, that we are in a dream, but more properly speaking, the dream is having us. The dream we are in is not our dream. It is the dream of another agency. Now, you will not find anywhere in the teachings of Buddhism such a distinction being made. But of course, that distinction is one of the primary teachings of Planetary Tantra, isn't it? Life as we know it, the life of one banana when we are awake, the life of two banana when we sleep, is equivalent to the event of three banana. Namely, we are in a lucid dream, but it is not we who are the dreamers. So at the point of identifying who is the dreamer of the dream that you are in which you have three options of experience, to be lucid with the dreamer, to be asleep or in a zombie-like state, or to be awake and handle that as best you may. Those three options are three events of consciousness. They are three experiences of a direct and simple kind which you can have and do have all the time. And securing those events into the ground of consciousness through the direct observation of how your own mind works is the practice of Dog Zen. So the mantra, that simple mantra, will always get you to the threshold of the practice. One banana, two banana, three banana, four. Well, why the four? Well, there are, in fact, four essential simple practices of Dog Zen. And the fourth practice, well, what's that? Well, that's the recitation of the Dragonfly Sutra, to which you have already been introduced. So with only these four practices, you can realize the great completion, the great perfection. It is really, really close to what you already experience. And attaining it is a simple and direct act of pure spontaneity that only happens in the present moment of the eternal now. As for the practices, well, let's say they can be described in another talk. The practices are very simple. They do not require the kind of elaboration that you see through the massive content of Buddhist teachings and schools. So don't get the idea here that the mantra might go on. You know, the mantra does go on. One banana, two banana, three banana, four, five banana, six banana, seven banana, more. It doesn't go like that. Complete mantra is one banana, two banana, three banana, four, and more. And that's the completion of the mantra. Three fundamental foundational exercises corresponding to the three bananas. Four being the recitation and exposition of the Dragonfly Sutra, and more. And what is more? What is the one more element that makes a totality of five elements in the body of instruction of Dog Zen? Well, the more refers to you being more than what you are. By that I don't mean that you strive to be more, but that you already are more. You are what you are as a limited mortal human being, a human animal, and you are also more. The way to come to know the more and to be assured, apart from someone like me telling you, apart from learning it or hearing about it externally, the way to become confident in the more of what you are is through the dog-like devotion. Now just think of the devotion of a dog. Just think of the look in the eyes of a dog as it gazes at its master. That's the kind of look that comes into your eyes when you look at what makes you more. What makes you more is called, in the scheme of the 36 tattvas, Ishvara. Now, in Hindu devotional practices, there is a delicious phrase, Ishvara Pranidhana. Ishvara Pranidhana. It works when you aspirate the last syllable, Ishvara Pranidhana. And Ishvara Pranidhana is what you practice with the dog's devotional gaze when you look at what makes you more than what you are, at the same time that you are just as you are. So those are the five components of Dog Zen. And you can see now why it's called Dog Zen. One banana, two banana, three banana, the Dragonfly Sutra, and Ishvara Pranidhana. There it is, the total package of Dog Zen.